time for the Friday Newscap and some voices from the news this week.
I think that when it comes to people's personal medical decisions, that's something that's up to the people to decide whether they want to get the vaccine or not get the vaccine. I would encourage people to get the vaccine, but as to my status, whatever, I think that's my own personal business.
If people want to place a bet, if they want to bet on sports, they can find a way. And now we have a way of collecting that data, monitoring that data, watching that data. And more importantly, we can generate revenues for our state and for the general fund, which is brilliant.
There's nothing in state statute that requires you to throw out those ballots. That was something that was included in a past elections procedures manual. And as we were drafting this procedures manual, we talked with the counties that still employ that precinct-based model. And they're saying that they can do this.
I think students, by and large, have told us that they're willing to wear masks. So an interesting dynamic here is that the adults are the ones that appear to want to have this fight, and the students really just want to go to school.
And with us to talk about vaccination requirements, legislative resignations, and more are Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting. Emily, good morning.
Good morning.
And no relation, we think, attorney Tom Ryan. Tom, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. You can trace us all the way back to Adam and Eve, Ryan. Isn't that right, Emily?
That's right. Tom and I are actually broadcasting from our parents' basement.
Yes.
Emily.
Now, all right. So now the conversation should start with the attorney, and yet we know I'm going to let Emily go first on this one, though. So it's feds versus state again, Emily, on this vaccination thing. Now the Biden administration has come out with requirements for the COVID vaccine. Governor Ducey, Mark Brnovich coming out very strongly against them. Arizona will not sit idly by. What do you make of this latest fed versus state thing?
You know, in some ways, it just reminds me that it's easier to be a Republican governor with a Democratic president because there's a lot less nuance. You're not trying to win over a difficult Donald Trump or keep up with him. It's just someone to oppose all the time. And I think Ducey and Brnovich had very Republican reactions to this. I am interested in Tom's opinion because I think with the testing option that Biden has thrown out, you know, this could hold up in court. And if that's the case, Democrats may have just baited Republicans into going full anti-vax and losing the suburbs in the next election. But, you know, that's only if it works and actually reduces the spread of Delta.
Oh, a compelling thought there, Tom. What do you think?
Well, first off, I'm going to give you a political answer and then the legal answer. And the political answer is I never thought that being pro-pestilence would be a political ploy that would play out the way as well as it has here. But apparently the Republican leadership in Arizona is going full on that. Listen, here's what's happening. The attorney general has a law that says if a senator complains about a city or a county doing something improper or violation of the law, the attorney general has the power to write a letter, tell them to cease and desist, and if they don't cease and desist, then millions of dollars of state funds can be pulled away from that city or county. So that's the threat. The problem is I think that's entirely unconstitutional on two levels. Number one, I think that law is an improper violation of the cities and charters and, you know, the towns and counties to have their own control over things, as well as, you know, that when you have a charter like Tucson, they've already lost that argument.
Right. Well, so we're talking about feds versus state and then state versus cities. That's another complication there.
Yeah, and Emily, I want to ask you, sort of, it seems like there are so many different levels of government sniping at each other. Right now, we talked about the federal government against the states, the state and the county and cities and school boards. Like, it seems like nobody is getting along right now. I'm curious what you make of the fact that it seems like all these various levels of government are either suing or threatening to sue each other.
Well, I mean, it's a mess. You know, we're in a major crisis that is dragging on and on, and everyone's fighting and wrestling over power and trying to control different levels of government's activities. And Tom's right. You know, there's a law that our state legislature passed that says they can withhold state shared revenue to cities, to counties, if they violate any state law. Well, what's the impact if there's a federal law that now provides them some cover? You know, both Maricopa County and the city of Tucson employ well over 100 people, it sort of explains Mayor Romero's almost laughing reaction to Brnovich's comments. You wonder if maybe she expected something like this to come down, because it definitely complicates things.
I think they should just go ahead and say to Attorney General, forget it. We're going to go ahead with this. Because what's going to happen then is they're now going to have to deprive Tucson and Maricopa County of hundreds of millions of dollars in an election cycle. Good luck with that.
Well, and Tom, there's also the issue of this phrase that we keep hearing, defund the police,
yes,
which we're now seeing maybe Democrats trying to weaponize against Republicans. If, you know, we've heard maybe in Maricopa County with the issue of the routers and the audit materials, and maybe with Pima County as well, and the vaccine mandate.
Absolutely. No, that's exactly what they're going to do, is they're going to be taking away money from needed public services, public transportation, defunding the police, public sanitation, all the things that we need right now as part of fighting the pandemic. It's just not a good political move on their part.
Emily, we can certainly come back to this issue, but I want to advance a bit, and that comes down to this recent Paul Bentz poll for High Ground related to how people generally feel about mask requirements. And it sure feels like what we're seeing, at least to some extent based on the poll that Paul did, that we're seeing a lot of the Republican Party loyalists that have sort of become Trumpian in that sense, that group is saying absolutely no mask requirements. We are definitely in favor of banning mask requirements. But then there's that maybe that 20% piece of Republicans, and then many independents, obviously many Democrats going the other way. How do you see this playing out in this scope that Mark just laid out about all the different government stuff? Are we going to see this actual argument of freedom versus overall community health? Is that going to be a winning argument for one side or the other?
You know, I think it's going to be a winning argument for hyper-partisan Republicans who are competing to win a Republican primary. But, you know, they need to be concerned that the math isn't going to add up when they get to the general. You know, we've seen Carrie Lake stomping on masks and lighting a mask on fire in a campaign video. You know, when I look at this poll, when she comes around and tries to win a general, you know, lighting a mask on fire may not be in vogue this time next year. I don't know that it is right now, because I think the majority of Arizonans hate wearing a mask, but would rather put it on their face than have to lock themselves in their houses. And, you know, I think that's where we are. And it's going to be hard to pivot to the center if you're lighting things on fire.
You be a parent and have little children who are unvaccinated being forced into a school where other parents are saying, freedom, I don't want my child masked. It creates a lot of fear, anxiety, and pain. And I'll tell you what, that's a great motivator when people are looking at who they're going to vote for. What the Republican candidates need to remember is they're no longer 50% of the electoral process here. They're more like about a third.
Well, Tom, we've talked for so long about the politicizing of mask wearing in and of itself. And yes, we've seen numbers that indicate that manifests itself. This is even your point about kids and schools makes that even more stark. It definitely feels like everything has been politicized. Again, as I mentioned, there's that small share of Republicans. But for the most part, there is this big group of, again, I'm saying Trumpian Republicans, who that group has grown. So this dynamic has, I guess, evolved to some extent.
Oh, it's metastasized. And you can look now at in Brophy, for example, a very famous Roman Catholic school here in Phoenix. 800 people sign a letter objecting to the vaccine mandate, and many of them don't send kids to that school. They don't go there. And we're seeing that not only at something like Brophy, we're seeing that in the public schools as well, where these school boards are being confronted by people who have nothing to do with those school boards but have just the desire to go scream and yell and threaten them. That we're seeing that all over the place. Yeah.
Emily, obviously, it's an eternity until people start voting again in Arizona next year. But I'm wondering, you know, we're talking about this school issue. How big of a motivator might that be? How top of mind might that be, even for primary voters when they're making a decision? Do I want to support somebody who will not let my district impose a mask requirement, or do I want to vote for somebody who will tell my district, yes, you may not do it, so I don't have to send my kid to school in a mask?
Yeah, I think it could potentially be a really big issue, you know, especially for female voters, for parents, for those suburban voters that everyone's chasing right now. You know, there are independents and moderate Republicans, like it or not, that the Republican Party has to win over in order to win a general. And what I'm about to say is incredibly cold and callous, and I have to couch it with that because lives always matter more than political strategy. But the cold, hard reality that we all know is that if we see a lot of loss of life this winter, and if they're children, there will be consequences for that.
Absolutely. We've lost over 19,000 Arizonans now. That's more than the combined lives lost in World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Think about that number for just a moment. And yet we still are having this fight. It makes no sense. Can you imagine if we had this national attitude when Jonas Salk and Dr. Sable invented the polio vaccine? We'd still have polio ravaging our American children today. It makes no sense that this is still going on like this.
Well, and Tom, and we've seen, you know, hospital officials keep telling us that they are seeing more and more pediatric cases as school has been in session for several weeks now. And, you know, there's going to be a hearing next week, I believe, on one of the lawsuits dealing with the ban on mask requirements. I'm wondering, though, given what we've seen in Florida and Texas, is it at all surprising to you that nobody has sued just on the basis of trying to get rid of that particular piece of the law that says districts can't ban masks, as opposed to having it as part of a single subject or a title of a bill lawsuit?
I have. In fact, one of my suggestions was they should just make it as part of the dress code. Now let Ducey try and ban that. You know, this is just utter nonsense. And it's what you're seeing is this. You're seeing a disassociation of a risk from the timing of the harm. So somebody says, I don't have COVID, I'm healthy, I'm strong. I don't need a vaccine, I don't need a mask. And because the harm is not immediately associated with accepting that risk, people don't understand the risk. It's like people who smoke cigarettes. The actual harm is disassociated with the risk of smoking because it's so far down the road.
Emily, I want to close the segment with just going back to sort of the raw politics of this. And this has been something we've brought up for the last couple of weeks on the NewsCap related to Mark Brnovich. The Attorney General has a record in terms of how he goes. It is not necessarily a moderate record, but it is less conservative than some of his opponents, whether it's for the actual Senate race he's in or many of the gubernatorial folks running on the GOP side. So when he starts doing things like this, when it comes to speaking out as strongly as he does against Joe Biden, is he someone who would have a more difficult time or a less difficult time coming back to the quote-unquote center for a general?
You know, so much can happen over the course of the next year. You know, if he brings some suits and, you know, lets it play out and it's sort of, hey, I did my part, you know, it's kind of a softer way to chase those primary voters. I guess it just depends on how angry and whipped up and in front of it he gets. And it also depends on how Senator Kelly is handling and managing this issue. You know, both of those things are going to impact each other.
Yeah, Tom, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think he's going to have a very hard time swinging back to the center. I think at this point he's made it virtually impossible for himself. He's aligned, you know, and here's the thing. He's tried to move to the hard right, and he doesn't understand the hard right will never embrace him because they saw him sign off on the certification of an election they claim was stolen. And so they'll never accept him. He'll never get that base back.
That's Attorney Tom Ryan. Also with us is Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting. With Mark Brody in Phoenix, I'm Steve Goldstein. It's the Friday NewsCap, which continues after this. Good morning. The Friday NewsCap on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guest today, Attorney Tom Ryan and Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting.
Emily, I want to go back to something we touched on briefly in the first segment, which is this dispute between Tucson and Attorney General Brnovich. Brnovich this week said that Tucson is not allowed to pursue its vaccine requirement for city workers. Do you see that the city has said that it is pausing it while it considers its options? It seems like the options are basically to stop doing it or to take it to the Supreme Court. Do you see one of those as a more likely outcome here?
You know, I would expect to see them, especially after President Biden's announcement yesterday, where, you know, they fit into another employing over 100 people category. I would fully expect Tucson to march forward with that requirement now.
To do it, or do you think to take it to the Supreme Court?
I think they'll just go ahead and do it and allow Brnovich to to pursue a lawsuit.
I'm with Emily, and here's why Mayor Romero would be right. The federal government has tools at its disposal that Ducey does not have. It has the Commerce Clause, for example. That's why we have something known as OSHA, and we have something known as Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And what that does and what it's responsible for is ensuring that anybody who accepts federal money in exchange for accepting federal money must comply with OSHA mandates. And one of the mandates can be making sure that you have a vaccinated employment workforce. Tucson employs people. It accepts federal money. It has the federal government has the right to make that mandate, and there's nothing that Ducey can do about it. Now, it would be a shocking set of circumstances, even with the current conservative makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court, that they would come in and basically gut OSHA now in order to appease Governor Abbott, Governor DeSantis, and Governor Ducey. It would be a big shock.
And Tom, I'm curious what you make of President Biden talking about also, you know, trying to help out teachers and school districts that might be affected by violating statewide bans on mask requirements. Do you see that maybe playing a role here as well?
Oh, absolutely. If Ducey says we're going to cut education funding and Biden says I'm the education president, that's going to look very bad for Governor Ducey. Yes, you can cut the funding, but he has the right to come in and fund it some more. And then what's Ducey going to do? Cut it more again? Part of the problem here is Arizona's a land-grant state. That means we're supposed to be providing education to all of our students from first grade through the fourth year of college, free or nearly free, and we have not even been close to doing that. And so every time Ducey threatens funding, he is really doing it in violation of a constitution that's now existed for 111 years.
Emily, let's move on to the legislature, and there have been some resignations this week. One is Kirsten Engel, who is running for Congress in southern Arizona, although we'll see what the district looks like once redistricting goes into effect. Also, Representative Brett Roberts on the Republican side resigned. Considering we still have one more big legislative session coming up before another election, what do you make of this generally? It sounds like we're going to see even more of an exodus at some point soon.
I think we very well may. You know, Senator Bowie also resigned, and I'm hearing rumors that there are more resignations to come. You know, it's for a variety of reasons. It's pretty standard in Engel's situation that she would resign to run for Congress. That's been sort of the tried and true play, is you back out of your legislative office and you dedicate yourself to that congressional run full time. I will point out that Daniel Hernandez is doing the opposite. He's running against her in that primary, and he's committed to stay in office. And so, you know, that could play out to his advantage. Historically, people do it a little differently, but, you know, he may be able to play that as an advantage. Mr. Roberts cited family reasons. In the case of Senator Bowie, I would categorize that, without having spoken to him about it, as swing district fatigue. You know, that poor guy has been beaten up from both sides for many years. And it's just gotten so bad and so hostile down there and so emotional on every topic that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't a lot of people who are thinking about, should I unplug and run for higher office, or should I just step away entirely? It has to be taking a toll on them.
Well, it is interesting, Thomas. I assume that politicians are ready to run for higher office, but maybe the stress of the last few years has been even more intense.
I think politics on a local level and a national level have become so vitriolic and transgressive that it makes it hard for somebody to stay in politics. I remember the day as a young man when Republican Burton Barr and a Democrat Art Hamilton could sit down and look at each other with candor and respect and work out good stuff for the state of Arizona. Those days are long gone. We now have this ideology of, if I'm in charge, it's my way or the highway. And it is very toxic, and it will induce wariness like you wouldn't believe. So I don't blame these people for getting out. Part of this is a natural process when we go through election cycles. You see people resign. I think you'll see Jeff Leninger resign to run for state treasurer. I think there will be others that will do the same thing. But this toxicity is just brutal.
Well, Emily, does that have any impact, or will, given where we are right now and where we may be come January when the session, the next session comes back in, does that have any kind of impact on the actual legislating that happens if you have some number of people who are coming in sort of midstream, midterm here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, for the offices that are resigned, we're going to have new people coming in, and they're going to be trained and brought up quickly by people who have only experienced, in some cases, a COVID legislative session, which means no one's there in person. So it's going to kind of be all over the place. There'll be a quick learning curve. I expect it to be a short session because we're in an election year and the last session dragged on so long. And then when we come back the following year, you know, we could have, you know, 80 of the 90 could feel like brand new people, which, you know, that can be good. It can be bad. You know, we'll just have to ride it out. But yeah, I think it's going to have a big impact. And I expect this session to be much quicker.
Boy, 80 of the 90 new members, that makes your job a lot easier, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of introductions to make.
It's cushy, baby. It's cushy.
Well, Tom, I'm curious to get your take on the idea of, you know, if one is running for a higher office, this question of, do I resign my current seat to focus on the race, or do I continue and, you know, sort of campaign on the weekends, you know, after the session maybe is done for the day? And especially like in a district down near Tucson, like it's not like someone like Daniel Hernandez can just easily drive back and campaign, you know, at 5 o'clock when the legislature adjourns for the day. Like, I'm curious what you make of that question of what to do.
Well, two things. Number one, we used to have a really strong resign to run law. In other words, if you're running for office in a different position, you need to resign to run. We've gutted that, unfortunately. But let's get to the more, you know, tactical view of what your question is looking at. So Dan's up here in Phoenix, and his constituency is down there in Tucson. With COVID, we've learned now we can do things remotely. We do things with Zoom and FaceTime. We have town halls that are virtual. You know, look, Emily and I are broadcasting from our parents' basement today. So I think we do a lot of fundraising now over the internet. So when things were more analog in terms of politics, I think it would make a huge difference. But now that things are more digital, I think it can be done remotely, and I don't think it will have that much of an impact. Plus, he's pretty well known in Tucson anyway. Both of them are.
Yeah.
Emily, let me switch up to, this could only perhaps be one question for you and Tom, but Tom and I were talking about it briefly. Another attorney general candidate on the GOP side, and that is Dawn Grove, who our listeners are not going to know that name necessarily, but she's from the Ping family and has worked with Ping, and she has also worked very closely with the chamber, which one would think would be a really good way to fundraise. What should we know about her?
Yeah, I think you make a good point. She's got deep business ties through the Arizona Chamber. She's a Ducey type candidate. You know, she's not a household name. She doesn't have any name ID. But that's a real opportunity for fundraising to get her message out. And I think it's going to come down to what the message is, because when you're running for AG, you've got a real opportunity to stay out of some of this messy policy on COVID and some of the policy discussions and focus on law and order, because it is a law enforcement office. And I think you'll see candidates like Tiffany Shedd stay the course on some of that. So it will be interesting to see what she does with that fundraising and what messaging she spends that money on.
Tom, any thoughts about that? Because I think what Emily was saying there, Mark Brnovich has not avoided stepping into some of these things. What is
successor? She's going to go into it full speed ahead. Look, she has. She's going to go from ping pong money to King Kong in this race here on the Republican side.
I wish I had a rim shot for you there.
Hey, that despondent fricative sound you heard was former Supreme Court Justice Andrew Gold wondering why the heck he resigned now.
Exactly.
She becomes the front runner in this whole process, I think, on the Republican side. She still has a very formidable opponent in Chris Mays, who's very centrist and will play well to Democrats, centrist independents, and centrist Republicans.
Emily, let's end on a national political question with some local ties here. Stephanie Grisham, former communications director for President Trump. She also worked for First Lady Melania Trump. Some Arizonans will remember her as working as a staffer in the state legislature. She is going to be publishing a memoir. And one of the great lines about this that I read was that she knows where the bodies are buried because she buried them and has a shovel in her hand. So I guess the question is, like, if you are a part of Trump world, like, is this the kind of thing that makes one nervous to know that she is writing a book?
Well, I have to start by saying, as someone who is watching American Crime Story, I will for sure buy a copy of Stephanie's book. And I do think it makes a lot of people nervous. I mean, imagine if you thought you might be in that book. There are people at the national level, there are people at the local level that are just hoping they don't make an appearance in the book. And, you know, I think what this tells us is Stephanie's not going to work in politics, at least not straight politics, but, you know, she could turn this into something else that's beneficial for her if the book is a bombshell. And whether it is or whether no one buys it, you're still going to be nervous if you think you might make an appearance.
Tom, a lot of politicos rifling through the index to see if their last name is in there.
Perhaps so, but I think this is more sound than in fury than actual stuff. She's, you know, somebody described her as sitting in a lake of gasoline with a match ready to light. That's a great metaphor, except she's not gonna torch the very meal ticket that got her to the very top. I think you're going to see you're going to hear all these outrageous comments about the book, but what you're going to find out is it's going to be very tame. That's my expectation.
And we see these books all. Emily, go ahead. But I was thinking that we see these books all the time, and do people actually, even those who buy them, do they actually end up reading them?
Well, I'll give you a full report on it after.
Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting, Attorney Tom Ryan, thank you both, and thank your parents for us for the delay.
Bring the mac and cheese on Sunday, Emily.
Take care, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.